Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. No, it's not a good morning. Have you been outside yet? It's raining cats and dogs, whatever that means. Maybe I'll ask our guest today is James Anderson, who is the Marion County naturalist, and he knows everything about cats and dogs and rats and snakes and little critters, and we're going to talk to him about those things. And you know, they're all kind of hiding away now, so I like it better when they hide away. But we'll get with him. Are you ready to talk about all the critters, James? All right, I've got to figure out which microphone you are on.
Good morning.
Oh, that's the one, not the one I had you on first. Okay. All right, we're out of here. We're not out of here. The music is out of here. James, what's happening out on the tall grass trail? I love going out there, but now that you told me that there were like 20 snakes out there last week,
oh yes,
I might not be coming out tomorrow.
Yeah, so as you were just kind of mentioning earlier, this is the time of year that our animals are going to be preparing for winter, and depending on the kind of animal, they're going to do different kinds of things, different strategies.
Do you see a lot of more activity or
yes.
less or what? Or more?
Yeah, I probably see a little bit more at this time of year, especially like with squirrels and groundhogs. You see a lot of them out in the fields trying to gather food to gain that fat. Some of the squirrels are, you know, burying their nuts.
They can have some of my fat.
Yes, that's right. And then red squirrels, they're really famous for caching, or also known as hoarding, their nuts into hollow logs or things like that. So different animals will have different strategies. We just had the big migration period probably at the beginning of October. So a lot of our summer residents are gone. You might have a straggler here and there, but most of them are down south or heading down south.
Okay, when you're saying migration, you're talking birds.
yes, primarily bird, but also monarch butterflies.
Yeah, monarchs. Now, do deer go north and south, or do they pretty much stay in the
Well, they stay. Now, they may travel, I mean, to different areas as food is mm-hmm. being less abundant in one area. They may go to another area to find food or shelter or water, but overall, I mean, they're going to stay, I mean, within the general area where they were born.
Well, their cousins, the antelope, don't they migrate?
Yes, antelope and elk and moose. Yeah,
now, are they truly their cousins, or did I make that up?
No, they're a distant cousin. Now they're more closely related to the elk and the moose.
Okay,
but
and
yeah,
they migrate too, don't they?
Yeah,
the moose and the elk.
Yeah, now like the elk, especially out west. I mean, they migrate up the mountain and down the mountain and into the prairie regions. But versus you know. Deer don't really have that kind of habitat here in Ohio. So
yeah.
Especially with the farmers getting all the corn and soybeans off, you know, they're taking advantage of what's left on the ground. And then when that's done, then they head off into other foresty areas or in your yard and trying to find food or water shelter.
Is that what they do during the winter? You don't see them as much during the winter.
So it's kind of funny. Just during this time of year, this is when you see most of the deer activity,
right?
Because the rut season or the breeding season.
Plus people are out trying to shoot them.
And yeah, yes, and the hunting season. So that kind of causes a lot of the deer activity, especially around roads and all. But once you really get past about December, January, their activity is very, very slim. I mean, they go out just to find food maybe every once in a while, but most of the time they stay hunkered down in their little deer beds.
Do they semi-hibernate, or is it just hunker down?
They just hunker down.
Okay. Right.
So, and yeah, not all animals hibernate.
Yeah.
We have our some exceptions, such as the groundhogs, the bats, and the bears. Of course, and a lot of our reptiles and amphibians, they hibernate as well, and some of our insects do, and fish. But some of them really tough it out, what I call, like squirrels, chipmunks. Then we got skunks, opossums. Those guys will stay active. Now, they can go into a temporary hibernation called torpor. And it only means when it's extremely cold and they kind of go in that little semi-hibernational state. Once it starts to warm up a little bit, then they're, okay, well, we can go out and be active again. Because
okay.
Like skunks, their breeding season is in February. So, and I mean, that's still winter season.
That'll keep them warm.
Yeah, it sure will.
A little love will keep them warm.
That's right.
Well, now, so That's why we don't see deer out on the road in December, or I mean January and February, because they're just trying to stay warm.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Now, do they eat much during those times of the year?
Like we said earlier, a lot of times they're going to try to eat a lot right now since there's more food availability. But now, or when winter season hits, they'll eat a lot of branches from trees. So it's not very nutritional, but it gets them by. Yeah. And then once some of the leaves start coming in to the early spring and the wildflowers, then they're like, okay, we can switch our diet from trees to better tasting plants.
Yeah. Kind of like me, when I can't find a snack, I'll go have a piece of cucumber or something.
Yeah.
It's terrible, but I got to have something.
Yeah, well, it gets you by, right?
Yeah, it gets me by. Yeah. Just for the day, right? Okay, so now tell the folks why there were so many snakes when it got warm out.
Yeah, so since snakes are cold-blooded, they're not able to shiver. They're not able to increase their body temperature.
They make me shiver.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. So they depend on what's the outside temperature. So if it's 60 degrees, then they're 60 degrees. But how they get warmer is if rocks, asphalt, if that warms up, then they'll say, okay, well, let's take advantage of that.
Well, how cold... we've had sub-zero days. What happens to snakes on sub-zero days? Do they get kind of turn like an ice cube?
They can, especially if they don't prepare for hibernation. Their goal during this time, it's kind of warm during the day, and they're able to store the energy. Then it gets cold at night, and then they kind of start the cycle again. But then once the day starts getting cold, then that's when they're like, okay, then there's no point in being out. Let's go into a burrow or a hole or underneath someone's house.
So they live in the dirt.
Underneath, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, some may find a hollow log. Some may find underneath a tree root. A lot of times they end up in people's houses.
Now you're trying to scare. It is almost Halloween. Go ahead.
So there was a thing on Facebook. I saw that a bunch of, I forget where in the South it was, but they lifted up this little shed, this shack, a bunch of rattlesnakes were hibernating underneath it.
Why did they lift up the shed?
Well,
I had to know there was something under there.
Yes, they might have found one, and they're like, okay, well, there's one. Let's check it out. But yeah, they lifted it up, and there's just this whole big ball of these rattlesnake species.
I saw a documentary about mice, or not mice, rats. And they did a similar thing and moved a temporary shed, and all these rats came running out from underneath the shed.
Gets you the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah, it does. But it's a good thing to talk about around Halloween.
Oh, yeah.
Do you do anything out on the tall grass trail at Halloween?
We typically do, yes. We did the Trail of Treats, which is our big Trail of Treat event. That would have been last Saturday, because we typically try to keep or avoid with the different villages and City of Marion with their Halloween tradition.
Yeah. This year,
we weren't able to do it. Yeah, so we're hoping next year.
That's a shame. Yeah. Well, yeah. They keep talking about having a inoculation here coming soon. We'll see.
Yeah.
All right. You were going to talk about acorns, but I'm gonna hold you off because we're down to about 30 seconds before we got to take a break. Is there anything coming up this week that we can mention? Are you doing anything out at the trail?
We're going to do a park trash up pickup on November 5th.
Cool. We'll get people to try it. Now, I always tell them to call out there. I assume that's correct, because
Facebook. Yeah.
Yeah, some of those you have a limited number of people.
Yes.
All right. So I'll give that number after we get back, because we're going to have to cut away for my break. I'm going to try to be good about it today.
All right.
And
sounds
not
good.
Do my typical Charlie thing and walk right through it. So in about 5 seconds, we're going to take a short break, and we hope you will come back. We're only going to be gone about 10 seconds or about 2 minutes.
Scott, did you know that Halley's Comet used to fly over Marion every night?
No, Charlie, I didn't know that. How's that possible?
Well, it wasn't really Halley's Comet. It was Martha Dowse's fire baton coming from Girard Avenue.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Don't miss it.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager, Learning the Lingo.
GOAT,
GOAT, acronym, stands for greatest of all time. As in, spaghetti sandwiches for dinner? They're my fave. Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
All right, we're back here with James Anderson, the Marion County naturalist. He knows everything, absolutely everything about nature.
Right.
I'm setting you up here. So watch out for the first step. Yeah. Okay. Now, the acorn you brought in. Talk to us about the acorn.
So a lot of people don't realize that acorns come from oak trees. Mm-hmm. A lot of people think that acorns are from an entirely different tree species because, you know, we have our buckeye nuts come from the buckeye trees, hickory nuts come from the hickory trees. I'm not sure why the acorn got called different, but somebody decided to call it a different name. But
kind of shaped like a little piece of corn, I suppose.
I guess it could, but there's about 14 different native species of oak trees in the state of Ohio. And they split these guys up into two different groups, the white oaks and the red oak groups, because they're actually edible. And how we can tell if it's the red oaks or the white oaks is by looking at the leaves. The white oaks make more like lobe-shaped leaves, and then the red oak groups make like kind of pointy pointy leaves.
Can you tell from the shell?
You can. You can usually, if they're capped, usually it's distinguished. Now, this one's a red oak because I found it right under a red oak tree. But some
you
like
cheated.
Yeah, but like a bur oak, I mean, their cap is so big and it's really fuzzy.
Oh.
There's some that the cap almost engulfs the whole nut and just leaves like a little tip. And it's really cool because in Hocking College, we had for our final, we had to look or identify some of the trees just by their nuts.
Well, you went over to Burr Oak probably to do it.
Burr Oak, Hocking Hills, all those fun places.
Now, they're all edible or just certain ones? Of
well, them? They are, but how to know your red oaks and your white oak groups will determine how you prepare them. Now, they all have what's called tannins. A tannin is just a natural chemical that all oaks have, and it's not just the nut. They have it on the leaves. They also have it on the barks. And what's actually really cool about the leaves, so if one oak is being attacked by a deer or a caterpillar or some type of herbivore, then it will release a chemical to the other tree species, but in other oak species, and saying, hey, you need to defend yourselves. I'm getting attacked. And sometimes some species of trees will release more tannins into their leaves and saying, okay, well, if you eat me, I'll be a bad taste. So they kind of interconnect with one another. It's really neat.
They talk to each other.
Yeah. The Native Americans actually used, and early settlers, they used to boil the bark, and then they would use it as put on their hides, like on deer or beaver or whatever.
The tannin.
Yeah, the tannin. Yeah, okay. They would tan with the tannin.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah.
But your red oak groups will have a lot of tannins. And how you get the tannins out, you just get a pot and boil it. And then you dump the water when it turns brown, put it on again. And then once the water's done being brown, then you know the tannins are out.
Okay.
Now, the white oaks will have a little, so they're easier to prepare. But the red oaks, I've heard, I mean, it can take up to several hours.
Oh.
And if you don't get those tannins out, I mean,
they're
bitter, but they also can make people sick. Now, animals like deer and squirrels, rabbits and bears, I mean, they're used to that. So, I mean, they have different digestive enzymes, and they're able to digest these a lot easier than what you and I could. So, again, really determining, you know, which oak group you're dealing with will help you, okay, how I should prepare them. And yeah, once the tannins are out, you can actually, they are edible. I had a friend that kind of crushed it up and made a powder and used it as a flour substitute, and he make acorn bread.
Oh.
It's a little bit different tasting, but it was pretty good.
Yeah,
he made all kinds of recipes with natural ingredients.
He must have had a lot of time on his hands.
Yes. He was a retired science teacher. His name was Mr. Bob.
Uh-huh. Okay. Now, my son, who is a vintner and makes wine, he talks about tannins in wine all the time.
Yes.
How you have to get them out and stuff.
And
you actually leave some of it in if you want a different type of flavor.
Yes. And, I forgot to mention that in my one program. But, we actually use tannins in the winery and in bourbon.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Now, we do it in small amounts, but yeah, if we didn't have those tannins, yeah, the wine and bourbon could have a different taste to
it. Yeah, it's kind of, without the tannin in it, there is no bite.
Yeah, I guess you could call it a bitey taste.
That's not quite the right term, but my son would say, oh, Dad, that's ridiculous, and he would tell me what it was. But anyway, now, there are, at Christmas time, you get all these nuts, you know.
Oh, yes, like chestnuts.
Yeah. Now, filberts look like that, don't they?
They're a little bit bigger.
Yeah, a little bit bigger. Are they related?
I mean, they're distant cousins, but...
Okay, but they're delicious.
Yes. I've never had one, but they look pretty good.
Yeah, they are. They're a little hard, and but real meaty tasting.
Yeah.
What is that? I can't remember the term for it, but anyway, okay. So they're not; they don't come from the oak tree, then.
Apparently. No.
Okay.
But Native Americans, what they used to do is they used to plant a lot of acorns along creeks and streams and rivers, and they would let the water or the creek or stream wash the tannins out, and then they would bring the nuts out, and then they would eat them.
Oh.
So that's how they would prepare it.
Oh, that's interesting. Now, if a person wants to, let's say they find an acorn, or for that matter, any nut that's fallen off a tree, how do you plant them? Can you actually grow from those?
You can. There's definitely certain nuts have certain, I guess, requirements on how they're going
to
grow.
Do you have like, to crack the shell off of that?
You could crack it, but actually just let nature take its course. Like buckeyes, I mean, they fall into the ground, and by early spring, you'll start to see a sprout come out.
Now, buckeyes don't have as hard a shell as this, though, right?
Oh, no. I would say, are probably a little bit harder. And, of course, they're
that's
bigger.
Right. Yeah,
they have that outer husk, the soft husk, and then once you take that off, then they have the large round nut. Now, it's kind of funny. In Kentucky, they say they're edible, but one side is toxic and one side is edible, but we don't know which one. So, I don't know. It was so funny when I was in Kentucky and did my internship there. They used to always mess with me, and they always tell me that. My nickname down there was Buckeye Brown. I don't know why.
Interesting. We have a tree in our neighborhood that you don't see very often, but I thought it was a buckeye when I first looked at it. I think chestnut?
Horse chestnuts.
And they have little spiky things coming off the husk that's around
them.
Yes,
they have a little bit more spikes on the husk than buckeyes. Buckeyes have like little spikes, but horse chestnuts are a little bit larger.
And they put out such a beautiful...
fragrance.
Tassel. No.
Oh, the tassel,
comes out before the nut.
Yes. Buckeyes are the same way.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
I do.
Well, they're related, yeah.
Now, did buckeyes put a tassel out before the...
It's called a racum. That's the flower structure.
Oh, sure. Show how smart you are. Embarrass me.
But it is very beautiful, and it smells beautiful too.
Yeah. Oh, does it really?
At least buckeyes do. I think it smells pretty good.
I'm gonna have to. I don't know that I have a buckeye tree on my walk.
Okay.
I'm gonna have to see if I can find a buckeye tree and smell the. What is it? A racum?
The racum. That's just the flower structure.
Oh, is that what that is? That's
yeah.
The flower. And so, if you want to plant a buckeye. You can still do it with the nut.
You could. It's just it's going to take a little bit longer.
Yeah, okay.
And also, too, buckeyes are, I don't know, they just seem to be a little more temperamental than some other trees. When you're trying to plant one in your yard, I just always get questions, especially my dad. He's always asking me, you know, how he can always help his buckeye tree because he bought one. It was like a little sapling.
Uh-huh.
And it does good some years, and other years it doesn't do well because a lot of people don't realize – they're the first tree to develop leaves in the spring, but they're the first ones to lose them, too.
Oh, interesting.
So, because you'll notice on when they're about to produce their leaves, their buds, I mean, they swell up so, so big.
Huh.
And then they just pop out, and then the leaves come out. So it's really neat.
Yeah. Well, now, those of us that didn't grow up in Ohio understand about the temperamental buckeyes. So. Anyway, all right, so we're going to look for, can you find acorns that, now I've seen a lot of wormholes in acorn shells.
Oh, yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah,
they must
yeah.
love to get in there.
Yeah, there's different insect species that will chew a little hole in them, and then once they do that, they're after what's inside, what's called the meat. So, think of it like a sunflower. So.
Yeah.
That's what they're overall looking for. And then after that, then they just leave it behind, and then nature takes care of it and decomposes, and it goes on. And then if it doesn't get attacked by an insect, hopefully it will grow into the next oak tree.
Now, how many species of oak trees are there? Because there seem to be an awful lot in my neighborhood.
There's, I want to say there's over 100 different species worldwide.
Okay.
But in Ohio, we only have 14 native species.
Okay.
The most common one at Tallgrass Trail is called the shingle oak. Within their name, they used to use the bark and make shingles on houses.
Yeah, okay. Sounds now the other tree that I'm not real fond of is the maple tree.
Oh yeah,
puts out a beautiful leaf, beautiful color. But my next door neighbor has one, and they all float down on my yard.
All the seeds. Yep.
No, I mean they. All the the seeds as well as the leaves. Now I've got a. I need an industrial leaf blower to get that stuff off of my yard. Those are big leaves, the ones.
They are. But, you know, speaking of that, you know, if you can afford it or what, but I always tell people, leave the leaves because there's a lot of insects that really depend on that leaf litter. A lot of moths and butterflies will make cocoons or chrysalis in the leaf litter. Some of fireflies. Well, in their nymph stage, will stay in that leaf litter. So when you're blowing it or raking it and destroying that, you're destroying that habitat. And then that's why you don't see as many butterflies or fireflies or moth species.
But if you don't rake it up, it's going to destroy the grass that's under it.
It can. It can.
All right, now, I assume...
It's kind of pros and cons, I guess. Yeah, you could look at it that way.
I assume you don't like what I do to my leaves. I mulch them down.
Oh, do you?
That would get rid of any little critters. But I mulch them because it's one of the best mulches that you can use.
It
doesn't
natural.
Cost anything. Yeah. And now I'm starting to feel bad that I mulch it. I haven't been mulching up until last year, and then I watched a program on how good leaf mold is, and it comes off of mulched leaves.
Yeah.
And it's really good for your plants. So I have a brown thumb. I am really bad with my plants, except for my perennials. Now, that's another question. I've got to check and see how much time. Well, I'll get into it after the break. Do you have any expertise on what I should do with plants that grow up and now they're starting to look nasty?
Okay. And
my guess is I should leave them up for the critters that come around. Is that not correct?
I mean, it'll definitely help your local wildlife.
Will it? Okay. Yeah. Well, we're going to leave them up then this year. My neighbors, if you're listening, that nasty patch out in the middle of my front yard is going to stay there. It's not so nasty. It's
just a
round plot of perennials. And we had some this year. They were big orange flowers, and I never keep the little thing that tells me what they are. And they were as tall as me.
Oh, yeah?
It was really beautiful this year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I hope they come up like that next year. And I have a few that are purple flowers. I thought they were, I thought I knew the name of it. Now I've lost it. But I thought I knew the name of it, but I'm going to have to find out the name of it because we still have beautiful purple flowers coming off of it, which I thought would have been gone by now, but they're not. We're going to also, you've got some things that are going on, and we'll talk about those. Cleaning up out there, that would be a good thing to talk about. And I've only got about 30 seconds, so this is called vamping if you're in the music business. I'm vamping right now until we get our break out of the way. By the way, for those of you who are going to go out and about this weekend for Halloween, Halloween will be on Saturday, and it'll run from 5:30 to 7:30. October 31st, and that's mandated by, I think, a law. So we'll be back in about 2 minutes.
I've got my milk and my bowl and my saucer.
Sounds like you're getting ready for breakfast. What are you having?
Well, I'm having a bowl of golden grams with a side of toast with golden butter and a nice golden glass of apple juice.
I should have known. WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM, The Talking Place.
taken everything and everyone I've ever loved away from me. Everything.
I blew my ankle out and I got prescribed pain pills by my doctor.
If making my detox public is gonna help somebody, I'm all for it. I just wish I would have had a warning.
Opioid dependence can happen after just 5 days. Know the truth, spread the truth. A message from Truth, the Ad Council, and ONDCP.
All right, we're back, and there are certain things that I have to keep to myself when you're talking about some of these critters and, you know, nuts and things. And anyway, all right,
we were talking about chestnuts.
Oh yeah, about chestnuts. The wood of that is highly prized.
Yes, yes.
And you said that we had had a blight. How long ago was that?
Oh, this
blight?
Was about 100 years ago.
Oh, okay. So they've been long gone, that particular brand of chestnut.
Yes, yeah, our native chestnut. And also, the nuts itself was very highly prized. And
really?
And as I was telling you earlier, in the southeastern portion of Ohio and West Virginia, I mean, that was a very important crop because, you know, you got to think about southeastern Ohio. You know, you live down there.
Yeah.
Agriculture is not very big. And
it's hard to plow on the side of those mountains.
Yes, right? Yes. So, but chestnuts was a really great crop, and it supplied a lot of, you know, economy to a lot of especially small towns in West Virginia, and this blight came through and destroyed about half of our chestnuts, most of our chestnuts actually. And because of that, and that's why you see a lot of these really small towns, I mean, are now really poor because it's kind of between the chestnuts and I also say kind of the coal mining. When that kind of all got pushed out, then that really affected a lot of, you know, your small towns in the southern portion.
Like New Straitsville.
Yes, and they're around Nelsonville. Yeah. Yeah,
all those little burgs. My wife used to have a truck route. We'd take newspapers around on Sunday night and give them to those little towns out there.
Use the old 33?
Actually, we got off the 33.
Oh, okay.
We were back on dirt roads delivering these papers.
Okay.
It was kind of fun around Halloween. Kind of scary.
I bet.
And occasionally, when the snows came, you didn't want to be up on those roads because there was no side to them. And we did slide down one of them one time.
Oh, wow.
A neighbor helped us out.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. They all have big trucks, and they can pull you out of a little truck out of a ditch, and they did. So anyway, now the chestnut that we have, so I could take those nuts off that chestnut tree that's in our neighborhood and actually eat them, huh?
Yeah, now you do have to prepare them too.
Oh, okay.
I haven't prepared a chestnut before. I imagine you might have to
roast them?
Yeah, roast
Isn't
them.
Isn't there
yes,
a
yes.
song?
You probably get some of those tannins off.
Yeah.
But I heard, I mean, they're a really delicious nut.
Huh. I'll be darned. Well, apparently the squirrels like them.
Oh, yeah.
Because most of the husks are empty.
Yes.
And they must hit the ground and the squirrel grabs it immediately because they're gone.
Yeah.
There might be 100 husks laying on the ground and only one that's not been opened.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Nuts, especially like chestnuts and acorns, are like the vanilla ice cream to us. They're just very delicious
yes.
to them.
Okay. Well, the neatest squirrel in all of Marion lives where this chestnut tree is. This squirrel is an undersized squirrel. That's why I liked him to start with.
Okay.
But he's solid black, and I mean solid.
Okay.
Except for the end of his tail.
Really?
Just pure white.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
You ought to come to my house. I'll show them to you.
I should, yeah. Between that and your chicken of the woods you found.
Yeah. Well, now let's talk about that chicken of the woods. I posted a, I can't remember.
Ohio backward, Backyard Stewards.
Backyard Stewards. Great. Hey, if you want to see a really neat website, that's a neat, if you like nature, that's a great website. There are people that put pictures of birds. How do they get those pictures of birds so
they have very long clear? Lens.
Is that right? Yes. Well, how about that? You had one on the Tall Grass Trail thing. What was the name of that bird that was staring right into the lens of, and there was a person behind him taking a picture. Shoot, I can't remember. I was going to ask you about him. Long beak, big bird.
Was it a heron?
No, it wasn't a heron.
A crane?
No. Anyway, I'll look it up on our break and bring it back up. I couldn't believe that the person took a picture, and the bird looked like it's maybe 2 feet away, and his beak took up about a third of that. And I thought, he's going to get bit that close. But I'm sure he must have used a telephoto, because that bird, I'm sure, was not tame. So
No. But some bird species will let you get really close.
Really?
Like tree swallows out at the Tallgrass Trail.
Oh, they'll attack you.
If you're near their nest, they'll attack you. But for overall, I mean, I've gotten probably as close as I am to you to them. Huh. And as long as I don't reach my arm out, I can get some decent pictures of the tree swallows.
Well, that's another thing I like about our little black squirrel in our neighborhood. He or she, I don't know if I can tell the difference. Other squirrels, I assume, can. I'm going to say she because it's so small. She'll let me get within about 10 feet of her.
Oh, yeah.
And she'll just stare at me. But if I make any kind of quick movement, she's gone.
They scurry, don't they?
Yeah. And she's just so pretty. I'm going to try to take a picture of her sometime. Okay. But usually when she's out, I don't have my camera or it's not ready to shoot a picture. You know how it is. Anyway, we were talking about that the fungus.
Yes.
Tell me about that. Why, if you go to that website that we just talked about, my picture's on there. And
you made a lot of people excited.
Really? I did have people contact me. Oh, you'll be eating for weeks.
Oh, yeah.
But this fungus was up in the top of the tree. That's where I first saw it. And then as I looked, I could look down the tree. It looked like the fungus had bled down the tree. And then at the base of the tree, the whole base of the tree is covered with this fungus. And what was it called?
Chicken of the woods.
And you can eat those.
You can. Yes, they
now,
are.
Somebody told me you had to... They probably weren't edible at the point where...
Probably not. They probably passed their prime.
Oh, okay.
And see, and that's the thing about when you're getting into edible mushrooms.
Yeah.
That they have a certain peak or period, and you can't pick them really too early or too late. And depending on the species of mushroom, it can become toxic.
I won't tell you how long I let the mushroom stay in my refrigerator then. If they're not black yet, I still eat them.
like the ones from the store, they're a little bit different. But the wild ones, since, you know, because the ones in the store, they're more controlled, you know, temperature and moisture and humidity and all that.
Yeah.
But versus, you know, ones in the wild, I mean.
And they've probably been bred to last longer.
Yes, and absolutely. But versus the ones in the wild, I mean, nature determines, you know, when it's going to be available and when it's, you know, past its prime.
Now, the mushrooms like morels and things like that. That you think about going out and getting in the woods.
Yeah.
Are there places that sell those commercially?
There's some. But because certain species like morels can be hard to find, and also, too, they only like growing in certain areas. I've been really getting into funguses, and especially on the edible side of things.
But I've got some toe fungus.
Okay. So you have to know your trees. Because certain mushrooms like certain trees and certain habitats, and if you don't know that, you're going to have a hard time finding certain mushrooms.
You need to get a dog that knows where all those are.
But it's actually funny you said that. And in Europe, dogs and pigs, they use for truffles.
Yeah. And truffle is nothing more than a mushroom, right?
Yeah,
underground mushroom.
Yeah, it's an underground mushroom. And we actually have truffles here in Ohio,
really?
In Marion County.
Huh.
So they don't. I get. It's that workshop I was telling you went to.
Yeah.
I guess he said it's not as good as the ones out in Europe, but they are edible.
You're eating a fungus. How can one be better than the other?
Well, just different ones will produce different tastes.
I got you. I never was a big fungus eater. I eat the ones that you buy in a grocery store, and that's about it.
And then, like I was telling you earlier, it's just so funny about mushrooms. There's always all these edible ones, and then. There's always these ones that look alike and they're toxic.
Now, do they know they look alike?
Yeah. But like morels, there's true morels and there's false morels. And then there's the chicken of the woods, which is edible. And then there's hen of the woods, which is toxic.
How did you know from the picture that I put on the...
color.
Oh, it's color.
Yeah, they are that very vibrant orange.
Okay.
Versus hen of the woods is more brown.
Oh, yeah, it was not brown.
But and that's the thing, you really got to pay attention to, you know, color, detail. I mean, and not just on one part, you can pay attention to all the parts.
So I have two sons that are colorblind. They better be careful.
Yes, yes. And some species, they look so alike, you have to actually get what's called a spore print and look at spores, and that they will be different. So sometimes it's at a microscopic level on how to tell the difference between if it's a good one or a bad one.
Why does anybody want to look for those? They better taste awfully good. I don't know. Let's see, we've covered that one. There was something else I was thinking about on my trip. When I do my walk, I walk about 3 or 4 days of the week. And when I'm not mowing grass, I walk 5 days a week. But I walk on a treadmill, so I won't see many nature things. Except it is kind of fun because I have a basement window, and for some reason or other, I've got a cat, a raccoon, a bunny, and several dogs that go by my window and look in at me and get scared and run. But I've seen that raccoon probably once a month last year.
And especially now you're going to see a lot of them because as they're preparing for winter, they're going to be finding any type of cracks or crevices to get in your house, your shed, your garage.
So be careful.
Yeah, so be careful. And not just raccoons, opossums, squirrels, groundhogs.
Mice,
yeah. All kinds of critters.
Yeah. Now, raccoons. If you get a strange critter in your house, like a raccoon, or, I know they're not strange, but one that you don't want in your house.
Yeah.
Is there some place you can call to get rid of those?
You have to call an exterminator or a local trapper because in the state of Ohio, and this isn't my law, but this is the state of Ohio's law, but once they're captured, you have two options. They can be released on site or they have to be euthanized.
Oh, my.
Because they don't want to relocate them to another area because of the chance of rabies.
I think I talked about we're trying to trap a raccoon that got up in my attic when I lived down in Athens. And we could hear it.
Yeah.
And we got a guy. We paid a guy to come out and trap him. He put one of those big box traps up in the never caught a thing.
Really?
And we could still. I think that raccoon was wandering around going, laughing at us.
They can get pretty smart.
And so he took it out of the attic and put it down on our porch, and sure enough, we caught a cat.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. And but the raccoon went away. I guess he figured, well, they're trying hard. I'll let them be happy. But how about bats? What do you do if a bat gets in your house? Now, would they go in at this time of the year?
Some species will, but most of the species have actually migrated.
Oh, they migrate.
To southern Ohio, anywhere there's large cave systems. But if they don't migrate, yes, they end up in our houses, our garage. Same thing, you do have to get an exterminator. But there's only actually a certain time period which you're only allowed to get them out. And then if there's more than, 14 or 15, especially in the early summer, you can't take them out because that's during their baby season when they're raising young, and then you can't do anything until afterwards, then you can get them out.
So by me using a tennis racket, that was probably against the law.
And I guess in a way it could be. But
well, he was smarter than me. I never hit him.
But I tell people, if you get them in your house, open up all the windows, doors, and then get a sheet. And if you have multiple people, the better. And just corral them to wherever's got the most openings.
What we did, and I only have less than a minute now, but what we did is we got a shoebox.
Okay.
And he was on the wall, and we put the shoebox on him. Now, it was an interesting moment trying to put the top on the shoebox, but we got him in there.
You had to be fast.
And then, yeah, you did. And then we threw him out in the yard and hope that the box opened up, which it did, and he flew away. Well, we're going to break away here for about 15 minutes. Actually, this one's going to be a little longer than that. We hope you'll come back. We're here with James Anderson, the Marion County naturalist. We're learning more than we ever wanted to learn about nature, and we hope you'll come back and join us, okay? We'll be right back.
You're listening to WWGH Radio, LP, Marion, Ohio. Anyway, I'm going to give it now, 740-383-9944. We're doing current events, and we're going to fly through them here. If you want to join in at any time on any current event, any memory, anything you want to throw on the table, do it right now, 740-383-9944.
The dog in the bank, world famous from St. Martin.
Is that called sangria?
Huh?
It's
not sangria.
Oh, no, sangria is in Italy. This is guava berry juice.
Guava berry.
Have you ever heard of guava berry?
I have had a lot of guava berry juice, non-alcoholic.
This has got guava berries in it in the bottom, and it's called guava berry rum.
Oh, okay.
Drinking rum and Coca-Cola.
By the way, I do want to wish a happy 95th birthday to Jane Meadows. Turned 95.
Wow.
Yeah,
you have to get her on a few days ago. You have to get her on if you get through her secretaries.
Her secretaries are difficult to get through. Once you get to Jane, you're okay, but the secretaries are
a little difficult. It's a force field it's around.
Yeah, force field around Jane Meadows. Streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com. Programming on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM is supported by CRT Mechanicals. Address 2842 Marion Waldo Road. Telephone number 740-225-4495. Webpage crtmechanicals.com.
GTG, BRB, OMW, be there in a few. You may think that these kinds of texts are fine because of their length, and you can easily send them at a stoplight. But no, answering one text can take your attention away from the road for 5 seconds. And traveling at 55 miles an hour, that's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Make good decisions. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopRex.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
Hey everybody, it's Pastor Steve Whitaker from The Pastor Spot. We are on every Tuesday at 5:15 and replay again on Wednesday at 3:15. We take pertinent issues of the day going on and look at them in a biblical perspective. So we'd love to have you listen and just, you know, call in, just get a conversation going and have a great time on the show.
Pastor Steve Whitaker is the pastor at Community Christian Fellowship in Prospect, Ohio. Address 209 East Water Street. This is Scott Spears, high above Marion in the WWGH News Chopper. If you see news in Marion, please email us at scott@wwgh1071.com and keep an eye out for the WWGH News Chopper flying high overhead. In the spirit of Halloween and fall, it's now time for a Halloween poem reading right here on WWGH Radio by Charlie Evers, Mary Ann Michaels, Martha Douse, Mary Ellen Withrow, Scott Spears, Marla Gibbs, Mr. McFeely, Pat Carroll, Bud Collins, Hugh Downs, and Robert Guillaume.
Witch, witch, where do you fly? Under the clouds and over the sky. Witch, witch, what do you eat? Little black apples from Hurricane Street. Witch, witch, what do you drink? Vinegar and good red ink. Witch, witch, where do you sleep? Up in the clouds where the pillows are cheap.
When Mother Nature strikes, who do you turn to? The number one trusted weather team in Marion County, the Marion, Ohio Weather Team. Get the latest conditions and more on our website at weather43302.com.
Everybody's talking about Now with Scott Spears, Monday through Thursday, 12:10 to 2 p.m. right here on WWGH Radio, from legendary comedian Kay Ballard, performing the fast food song.
Oh, there's one song that you like. I feel that, you know, fast foods have ruined the world.
Oh.
On the Champs-Élysées, on the Appian Way, there's McDonald's. By the Tomb of King Tut, there's a Chuck Full of Nuts and McDonald's. At the Scala, they sing by a big Burger King where the styrofoam boxes go sweet. What's the use? What's the hell? I just heard Taco Bell went and franchised a wing at the Louvre. You know, I could go on and on and on, but that's it. I love things that are topical and that are kind of true.
The legendary actress and the voice of Ursula from The Little Mermaid, Pat Carroll.
What would we do without gossip, for heaven's sake, Scott? Oh, oh, it's naughty, but it certainly fulfills a certain catty side of all of us. Oh, good Lord. When you think of the gossip sessions you've had with friends over the years. It's wonderful. Yeah. It's like putting your hands in front of a lovely fire.
I will do
anything you want, Scott. You know I enjoy being on your show. But just let me talking and I keep going.
It's now with Scott Spears, Monday through Thursday, 12:10 to 2 p.m. right here on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com. Join me.
This is Weasel Boy, and you're listening to WWGH 107.1 FM, streaming live on the net at WWGH1071.com. You can listen free on any mobile device by downloading the free TuneIn app and searching WWGH. Boy, I love free things.
And now a few words from Scott Spears, Charlie Evers, and the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams.
Charlie, do you know because of you, more Marian residents know that flipping the bird was invented in 320 BC than in any other county in America?
Yes, but I didn't tell you the rest of the story.
What's that?
At 320 BC, in 1 minute, the fat lip was invented.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Don't miss it.
Programs on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM are brought to you by Williams Grass Cutters. Telephone number 740-272-0062. Website williamsgrasscutters.com. Facebook page at Williams Grass Cutters. Email w.grasscutters@gmail.com.
I'm an IT guy and I have an office and I've got some computers in there and occasionally they break down. Who do I turn to? What do I do? Well, I can always listen to Adam, the computer guy. He's got all the information that I need to help me keep my computers running just beautifully. So if you have any computer information you need, you want to keep your computers running right, and you want to get the latest news and information, listen to Adam, the computer guy, right here on 107.1 FM, WWGH.
Today's top and trendy technology topics every Tuesday and Thursday between 2:10 p.m. and 3 with me on WWGH Radio.
This is Earl Pitsamurican. You're listening to WWGH 107.1 FM, streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com.
The Marion Towers Apartments are a supporter of WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Address 400 Delaware Avenue, phone number 740-387-9050.
Hi, this is Ted Williams, the man with the golden voice. In conjunction with WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, we're reminding you that during the COVID-19 pandemic, that it is best to keep your distance 6 feet apart from each other at all times. Wash your hands with soap and warm water as often as possible, and stop buying all the toilet paper. Remember, we are all in this together.
I am the bride of Frankenstein!
But I'm also the mom of Frankie Jr. and Francine Frankenstein. And just because we're monsters, poof, doesn't mean the pandemic hasn't affected us. First, my 8-foot husband with his big borrowed heart asked if his buddy Igor could move back in the laboratory. I mean, I love the guy I do, but that breath of his, frankly, it's scary. And that's wearing a mask.
6 feet apart, how about 12 feet, Igor?
And this virtual learning? Oh, it's enough to drive a parent, no offense to the Dracula family, batty! That's why we are thrilled to get out of the castle and go to Boo at the Columbus Zoo for safe Halloween fun. There's treat stations, a jack-o'-lantern seek and find, a pirate party, and more. Just schedule your entry time at columbuszoo.org. Oh, look, kids, there's the werewolf family.
Looks like someone hasn't gotten their hair done in a while.
Or their nails. Woof.
It's time for WWGH News. News about people, places, and plans. Live from the WWGH newsroom, I'm the man with a golden voice, Ted Williams.
This is Scott Spears in the WWGH News Center. Thursday, WWGH Radio had Candidates Night 2020. During Candidates Night, each candidate was asked why they are a Republican or a Democrat. We start with Republican candidate for sheriff, Matt Bales.
Well, I think growing up, you know, my parents had something to do with it because they were conservative. Listening to them talk about politics around the house got me thinking about things, and it kind of led me to that side of the aisle also. There are certain things that Republicans and Democrats are for. You know, Republicans don't like taxes, Democrats like taxes. I'm on the side that don't really care for taxes too much. You know, it's basically in the upbringing and the things that I've learned over the years that makes me a Republican. I'm a proud Republican also.
Tara Dyer, a Democrat.
And can I say a proud Jessica saying I'm a proud Republican? Well, I'm a proud Democrat as well. So let's get that out there. And then I kind of will bite off of what you said about characteristics that your party embodies that helps you to model your, you know, everyday life. And that's the way I feel about the Democratic Party. I, in being a proud Democrat, espouse the Democratic way, not necessarily high taxes, like you said, or whatever. But I feel like if you look at the Republican Party, you see one group that doesn't include people like me. You know, the Democratic Party is diverse. I look at the Republican at the national level, and I see there's one senator, Tim Scott, you know, who's used as my one quote-unquote black friend kind of a thing. So I espouse the Democratic principles because they're embracing of diversity. I think they're embrace of reality, and I think it's important for me and my children to understand that there are people out there that model behavior that I want them to be, and especially those six grandkids that I mentioned. I want them to live in a democratic society. Thank you.
Thank you, Tara. Rob Coons, Democrat.
You know, why I'm a Democrat is because we're supposed to be united, regardless of who you are as a person, color, sexual orientation, male, female. We are supposed to be united, and that's what I feel like Democrats do. We are very diverse when you look in the people who are elected on the Democratic side. I mean, that's something that means a lot to me because I value that. I value that as a person in my community, but I also value that in a workplace. I value that I want everybody's voices to be heard. I want everybody to be represented, and I feel like the Democrats do a good job at that. If I look at the Republican Party, I don't see that. I don't see they have my best interest in mind when they are making legislation or voting, but I feel like the Democrats do.
Jessica Wallace, Republican.
Hi, yes. Yes, so I grew up in a Republican household with conservative parents, and let me tell you what, I have a brother that is still not conservative. So when I say diversity, I definitely mean it. I grew up in Columbus, so really diverse with a very diverse family, and at the Thanksgiving dinner table, yes, we were that family that it got political, and that was that. It usually ruined dinner. But at the same time, I heard healthy dialogue between both parties. And I grew up with some mentors that were Democrats in Franklin County and some mentors that were Republican. And I still just feel strongly for the values of the Republican Party. What I believe those values are that I exhibit my work, it's hard work. It's working for everything that you have, blood, sweat, and tears, and it's hard work, and that's what it's going to take. I also believe in kind of your constitutional rights. That's why I love the court. It's your rights. It is. You have the platform with the judiciary to kind of argue, challenge, but at the end of the day, the Constitution's the Constitution, and We stand by it. And so those are some of the Republican values that really, you know, scream to me and make me a Republican and make me want to raise my children with those values, and all while respecting varying, you know, other political opinions. You can be a Republican and still respect what others have to say, and that is the kind of Republican that I am. Thank you.
Lynn Thomas, Democrat.
Yeah, I'm a lifelong Democrat, second-generation Democrat, actually probably third-generation Democrat, because my great-grandfather was Democrat. And I guess that's where my roots are. My values lie with the Democratic Party. I'm a devout Christian, and I was told one day, you can't be a Democrat and be a Christian at the same time. Let me tell you, challenge me on that. Anyway, personally, I do not believe in abortion. However, I don't take a woman's, I wouldn't take a woman's right away to make a choice. And that's the way it is. And I was a member of the NRA. I'm not any longer, but the point is, they got a little too strong for me. So you might question, a Democrat? Yes, I am a Democrat, proud, and I get along with Republicans just as well. It's not a problem, but I'm a strong, devout Democrat.
For the Marion, Ohio Weather Team, I am Zach.